Welcome back, everyone. We are the Pleb Underground YouTube show. We break down the shitcoin corner and the hopium. Joining me, fellow co-host Walton, and check it out, Walton's got a shirt on. Walton, what's happening, my dude?
I'm officially short Bitcoin. It's great to be here. This is Pleb Underground. We've got some stuff, you guys. Welcome.
I love it. I love it. All right. Before we dive into all the fun, Walton, we're going to take a look at some numbers. Who are the numbers? Who are the numbers brought to us by?
The numbers, of course, brought to us by Pleb Underground Pleb and at 2140 Data on Twitter. He's created some phenomenal sites called timechainstats.com. That's timechainstats.com. Check it out.
Awesome. And we actually featured his timechainstats.com in Pleb Underground Substack release this week. All right. Well, let's go. We've got a lot of stuff to go through here. This has been a pretty ugly week, but it also has some, it also has a silver lining. Anyways, here we go. At the time of this recording, the block height is 750,012. We're looking at a Bitcoin price of 23,380. Total public Lightning capacity, 4,584.28. And the Moscow time that I love to say because it just pisses people off, 4277. And it was actually pretty funny because, of course, you know, when the whole thing with Russia started blowing up, one of the one of the comments that we used to get on Simply Bitcoin was, why do you keep referring to it as Moscow time? And there was like this conspiracy that were like, you know, Russian supporters and stuff like that. And again, you can support anybody you want. I personally couldn't give a shit. Okay, but I'm just saying, it's, I think it's hilarious what people come up with. Okay, for, you know, for theories, just because you call something, you know, what you call it. But really what it had to do with was this person who created a whole entire conspiracy behind Jack Dorsey, signaling that he was kidnapped or captured by the Russians because of his block clock in the background. And actually, wait, speaking of backgrounds, we got to give a shout out to World of Rusty. This is going to be like an episode of shout outs. World of Rusty, in case you don't see it, yeah, awesome job with this background.
Look at this.
Right? So shout out to you, bud. This is amazing. Definitely way better than my copy and paste crop method that I was doing before. So I really appreciate it. And the logo is by Bitco. So Anyways, we do have some fun. It's not really numbers fun per se, but it's definitely going to pique some interest. Okay, so here we go. Before we dive into the hopium, we're going to take a look. This is a website that I randomly stumbled on that I think is absolutely hilarious, and I wanted to share this with everyone during the number segment. It's called thesoontimes.com, and they do have a Twitter account. Now, at first, I thought that this was real, and then I realized that this is just an absolutely fantastic troll site. So let's just take a look at some of the funny stuff, some of the funny articles that they have here. Man who insists he is in BSV for the utility spends coins on novelty hoodie. Okay? Then we have this other one, okay? Take a look at this. Study finds NFT profile pics are most effective testosterone blocker. I'm sorry, but it's kind of true. It's like the second you see that somebody has one of these paid for NFTs, I think that that's definitely a virtue signal that, like, to your future partner or a person who was thinking of being your future partner, you know, or husband or wife or whatever we're calling things these days, not to offend anyone.
Like, they low testosterone, right? Like so NFTs aren't fungible, but NFT owners are. There was a photograph last year of an NFT, I don't know what you call it, conference, and it was all some soy looking motherfuckers. Like, these guys were, you know, it was an ugly fest.
In all seriousness, it kind of is, right? Like, it just signals to everybody, like, you've just got nothing going on. That's pretty much what buying one of those and using it as your profile pic does. Okay, and then this was just the icing on the cake for me, and this is where I realized everyone needs to know about this website. Celsius invites Roger Ver to inspect financial statements. I mean,
wait,
look.
That's not a joke? Go back. Seriously?
Yeah, no, it's not a joke.
No, yeah, you're like, joke. You're joking with me right now.
I mean, come on. You can't expect, like, nobody is really asking Roger Ver to inspect the financial statements of Celsius. But it's fantastic. I mean, they actually have, like, a full, you know, a full little written article and everything on it. Anyways.
It's like The Onion before The Onion just started seemingly reporting what was going on.
Yeah, exactly. But look, we're going to add it to the notes, to the show notes, in case anybody wants to check this website out. I think it's hilarious. And at the end of the day, we do need more entertainment in Bitcoin, right? Like, there's only so much of the very technical, long-winded jargon that we can listen to. Sometimes we just need to have a laugh and be like, what the hell is this shit? Okay. Anyways, anything you want to add to this, Walton, before we dive into the Hopium?
I don't think so. I think, like, you know, shitcoiners are going to do their thing. We're going to do our thing. Like, you know, there's they have a lot of noise. And remember, it's paid for noise. It's coordinated paid for noise. We must fight it. Let's go, plebs.
Fuck shitcoins. There you go. I just took fuck Walton's line. I love that. Every single time now, I swear, every single time I see one of your tweets, that's all I think of. That's all I think of. Okay, anyways, here we go, guys. Let's dive into the next segment, Hopium. The Hopium segment is brought to you by RepresentLTD.com. That's right. You guys remember, I'm always sporting the hoodies. They're super comfortable. The fit is great. And if you're a skater, believe it or not, they just dropped a deck. All right, a nice black deck with beautiful writing. It's going to get ruined from doing all the tricks. Anyways, RepresentLTD.com. Check them out.
Welcome back to Pleb Underground. I've got some Hopium for you guys. What I want to show you is what seems like, you know, a pleb being negatively surprised at something. I actually think it's a good story. I wanna flesh out a bit of a theory with you, Phil. We're gonna see what we think. Let me share my screen.
I'm already excited. So
we go to a tweet from my boy Severin. If you don't know, by the way, this is a guy that's developing some very cool tools on Lightning. But he shared a tweet that was actually from CZ, you know, that wanker that owns Binance. And it was about big tech investing in the Bitcoin and wider crypto space. And this may be looked at kind of in two ways, right? I personally think the institutional adoption of Bitcoin isn't going to come in the form of all these companies putting it on their balance sheet like MicroStrategy. My view is that, and it's for two reasons, right? One is, I don't think these companies want to put Bitcoin in their balance sheet, in part because maybe, you know, it's hard to convince, you know, the rest of the board maybe to do so, even if you've got, you know, Bitcoiners on the board. But two, also, like, they have a kind of weird PR slash optics game to be played, which is if Bitcoin does better than their company, then actually all their company is like a bad way to own Bitcoin. Kind of as you've seen with MicroStrategy, right? We saw some of that in the numbers last week. Essentially, like, you're buying like a kind of slightly diluted Bitcoin. So why not just buy Bitcoin? So again, equity, like big public companies, they're not going to be putting, I don't think, by and large, Bitcoin on their balance sheets because it's a bad PR play, because then all of their equity investors start flocking to Bitcoin pretty quickly. So I think there's some games going on there with regards to PR. But what the way that I do see these companies getting into the space is actually investing in a bunch of different companies in and around the space. Now let's have a little zoom in, have a look at some of these companies and what they're up to. So at the top we see Alphabet, of course, the parent company of Google. They've put in roughly $1.5 billion. It's quite a lot of money. You can see they've put it into a number of different companies here. Voltage being the one I wanted to focus on. Voltage are building some very cool tools to do with managing Lightning nodes, selling and buying liquidity, Some really, really cool stuff being done there. And to me, this is how we see more widespread adoption. I've been trying to champion people to go out into their communities and help businesses that they use to adopt Bitcoin and Lightning, because that's how we're really going to see Bitcoin spreading, is by economies that you are all part of, local economies, adopting Bitcoin. That's going to make those economies more sustainable over the long term. And then, of course, that kind of positivity then helps Bitcoin to spread even further. Now, I believe these big, you know, financial and tech companies who are investing in these companies, I believe their play is that they don't want to compete with Bitcoin. And so what they're doing is they're trying to compete with companies that offer products and services around Bitcoin and Lightning, because that's what they're good at. They're good at offering products and services. They're good at, you know, reducing costs. And I think, like, if you have this vibrant ecosystem of developers building stuff on Bitcoin and Lightning, enabling merchant adoption, enabling commercial adoption, enabling institutional adoption of Lightning, is actually going to, I think, lead the way for institutional adoption of Bitcoin. Because ultimately, like, there are so many stores of assets right now. It's not on the radar sufficiently for some of these guys, or in the case of the financial institutions, they want to front run their customers. And so what they're doing, these companies, they're going to invest in these companies that where they can have a greater return, but also a greater percentage margin, right? Companies that are offering services can take a much larger cut than some company that's saying, I'm going to buy some Bitcoin for you. Bitcoin removes this need for custodians and intermediaries, and therefore decreases opportunistic rent seeking in that sort of space. And so these kind of companies are going to go towards rent seeking in spaces where they can do more of that, in the business to business commercial services sector.
Walton, I got to say this. I see a lot of really big companies. I see a lot of really big companies that are just investing in shitcoining. I mean, don't get me wrong. Alphabet with Voltage, right? And the digital currency group. Just Voltage, because DCG has their own issues. But Samsung invests. Like, if you go take a look at that, right? Yuga Labs is the parent for Bored Ape Yacht Club. Gross. Yeah, exactly. Now, yeah, well,
I agree, Phil. Like, should we really be focusing on like yes,
I know, but take a look, right? Like look, Microsoft investing in Consensus, right? Consensus was literally created by Joe Lubin. You know what I mean? Like, he's the co-founder of Consensus. And what did they just recently do? In the last 3 months, they offered to the government guidelines on how to make a CBDC. So and look,
why?
Look at
BNY
Mellon, right?
It's owned by JP Morgan. It's owned by JP Morgan. Of course, legacy financial institutions want to get in at the stuff that they can control, right? At the centralized stuff. But it is encouraging to see that there is also big investment in these tools that are going to help grow Bitcoin.
Yeah. Exactly. And this is why, right? This is why it's opium, because we see these big players, they're coming in. I just wanted to make another comment before, where you said Microsoft, $1.5 billion. Google, or the parent company of Google. So for the people who don't know, Alphabet owns Google, but essentially Google created Alphabet so that they can go and do investments a lot easier. But the point I'm trying to make is $1.5 billion for Alphabet is a drop in the bucket. There was a friend of mine that I used to work with, and his favorite saying was, Google has pallets of cash. Pallets of cash. And it's true. I mean, I've been there, you know, I've actually been to their offices and stuff. I've seen it with my own eyes. It's, you actually can't even imagine how much financial sway these companies have until you actually see what these companies have. Now, the other piece that I wanted to bring up about the hopium is that you can clearly see like Goldman Sachs, BNY Mellon, PayPal. I'm not so impressed. I'm not impressed, but I'm also not surprised, right? Because PayPal has no reason to invest, okay? They have no reason to invest in Bitcoin. Now, one thing that you will notice, okay, besides Voltage, okay, like we're going to take Voltage out of the equation, you'll notice that none of these companies are investing in BTC Pay Server. None of these companies are investing in Lightning Labs. None of these companies are investing in the node creators like
And yet,
Lightning
Labs was founded by a bunch of ex-Googlers. So actually, like in some, what you don't see is actually people at companies, you know, that are sister companies to maybe Bitcoin companies, or who are working in big tech. They leave to start their own firms as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if Lightning Labs had something to do with Alphabet. Investing in Voltage. I don't know.
All right. I like that. That's some good hopium. I like that. There's some right there. The fact that it's a bunch of ex-Googlers, that does give me some hope. But at the same time, it also makes me think that these people were the outcasts. Otherwise, Alphabet would have invested in them. But I get what you're saying. Through Voltage, maybe, you know, like this is, again, it's more lucrative for them to invest in these adjacent type of services. All right. Very good stuff. You know what? I'm feeling fairly bullish, even though we are where we are right now on the timeline.
And so I think essentially, like when it comes to Bitcoin's marketing machine, it's weird, right? Like we see, you know, plebs adopting it, getting really excited about it, and then those plebs must then enable them the businesses they spend money at to adopt it, which will then encourage more plebs to adopt it because they see Bitcoin accepted here, Bitcoin accepted here, all over the place, and it's putting it in their mind a bit more. So we get these kind of personal and then kind of commercial surges in interest in Bitcoin, and there's some interdependency between the two.
Very good point. Very good point. All right, that's some, you know what, Walton? That was some solid hopium. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Very nice. All right, everyone, it's time for the Shitcoin Corner.
Fuck shitcoins.
The Shitcoin Corner is brought to you by CryptoCloaks. Check them out, CryptoCloaks.com. It's 3D printed stuff by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. I've got myself the 3D printed Honey Badger. That's right. This thing is totally awesome. As I showed you guys last time, this is where I store the FUD dice. I really would like the black FUD dice. I only have the red and or orange ones and the blue ones. Don't forget to check them out. CryptoCloaks.com. Keychains. They've got coasters, stickers, node cases. Check out the Triton node case. And of course, I've got my cold power so that I don't have to connect my cold card to a computer and possibly risk that as an attack vector. Anyways, CryptoCloaks.com. Check them out. All right, guys, we've got a couple of stories for you in the Shitcoin Corner. One of them is going to be something a little more in-depth, but first we're going to take a look at a narrative that's being pushed and that we should all just, you know, lay down and take it. We just need to adopt these narratives. So here we go, guys. Let's dive right into it. All right, first one is from The Guardian. Do you want free speech to thrive? Then it has to be regulated now more than ever. I never knew that free speech required regulation. And you'd say to yourself, well, that's The Guardian. That's just a one-off. But wait, there's more. So we've got a tweet here from @shouse34. Literally Heather, apparently. Literally Heather. Anyways. At first, I laughed at the Canadians. Then I realized if I laugh too loud, Twitter will suspend my account for violence and realized I have no leg to stand on. All right, so this is CTV News. And for the people who don't know, I'm originally from Canada. And CTV News is a pretty big, you know, national news organization over there. So it's not like it's just like some, you know, random right or left wing type of news. So here we go. Experts say greater censorship laws are necessary to protect freedom of speech, freedom of the press. Greater censorship laws are necessary to protect freedom of speech. But okay, before we dive into the main part of the Shitcoin Corner, this is censorship, this business of regulating free speech in order to make speech free, okay? Don't be fooled. There's a reason why your brain can't reconcile this, okay? There's a reason why, and it's because it makes no sense, okay? It makes no sense. Your brain doesn't know what to do with the information. It has no clue. So all it can do is reject and shut down. But I have to say, what really bothers me, what's really scary, is that we're seeing this coming out of the US and we're seeing this come out of Canada, and we're seeing this come out at approximately the same time. So those of us who call us crazy, right, for thinking that the media all seems to say the same thing at the same time, why does it keep happening? And Walton, I mean, look, you're across the pond from me. Have you seen any from any national news agencies? Have they been touting this whole "we need to regulate free speech in order to make it free speech" type of narrative?
We don't exactly have free speech here. I probably break our free speech laws on Twitter too often. Somehow haven't got banned yet, but anyway, it doesn't make sense, right? If it's free, then that means without intervention, as far as I'm concerned. Like, a free market is one without intervention. Free speech is speech without intervention. You may not like that speech. You may think the person who's saying it is a complete idiot. You may think that they're hateful. You may think that they're disgusting. But it doesn't mean that they shouldn't say what they want to say. We all need to toughen up. I think if at the end of the day, Bitcoin is speech, right? Ultimately, Bitcoin is speech. Bitcoin is a messaging system, and if you have a problem with speech, then you have a problem with Bitcoin, and then I have a problem with you.
I really like the way you just frame that, right? That Bitcoin is free speech, and Bitcoin is speech. And the reason why I say that is because there's a narrative that certain politicians are trying to push that, you know, Bitcoin is not speech. Right? Bitcoin is a technology that needs to be regulated. And I want to go back to the first thing that you said, right? That essentially freedom to you means that it's unencumbered. Okay. That it is essentially it is allowed to flow. And this is kind of the problem, right? This goes back to what I said, which is we can't reconcile this bullshit. Okay. We can't sit there and think, oh, we're having freedom while I censor everyone that I don't agree with. Okay. That's not how this works. Okay. That's not how the real world works. I don't know what happened between the present day and 30 years ago, but somehow we've come to this belief that if something offends us, that it doesn't, it just simply should not exist. And for some reason, the government should step in and make it so. And I just think that that's completely crazy. And what people don't understand is that, people think that this is fine until it starts happening to you, because people don't understand entirely what all of this encompasses, right? Like right now, it's, oh yeah, you know, we want to guard your freedom. You know, we want to make sure that your freedom is upheld by adding censorship. But what happens when that freedom has to do with you going to a store? And you're simply not free to go to that store anymore. You're censored from going to that store for whatever reason. Maybe you drove too much.
That already happened.
Really? It's the virus which shall not be named.
So you're allowed to say that, but can I say lockdown?
Say in the virus that shall not be named lockdown.
Okay. In the 2020 lockdowns, It already happened, right? Like there were certain commercial stores that were deemed appropriate to be open, and other ones, you know, deemed not to be, necessary services at such a time. This is creeping, And it's a very, very, very slippery slope.
I think you bring up an excellent point because, you know, there's a lot of people who, you know, who felt that the work that they did every single day, the value that they were creating for themselves, for, you know, their communities, it turned out that the government let them know that they weren't required. You weren't an essential service. Who would have thought? You're not essential. And then all of a sudden, it turns out that what you're doing is not that important. But then when, you know, when everything starts to open up again and they need you to hop onto that frickin', you know, onto that hamster wheel, turns out you're real important again. This is very scary stuff. Okay, this is hypocritical. And the reason why you can't reconcile this is because it's bullshit. Moving on to the big part of this story. Here we go. Well, it's not this story. It's our next story. Here we go. All right. Along the lines of free speech, what is allowed, what is not allowed, how do we use language to attack and protect and all these wonderful things. Okay. We are going to dive into this. I mean, as some of you may know, if you have been following politics, if you have been following Bitcoin, you know that Senator Lummis is a quote-unquote Bitcoin supporter, okay? And, you know, she's been, you know, she, along with Gillibrand have, Kristen Gillibrand, sorry, have been essentially crafting this this Responsible Financial Innovation Act, okay? Let's dive into this because Beautyon wrote, who's a fellow Bitcoiner, and who wrote this really long, excellent piece about this. Now, we're not going to dive into the whole piece, but we're going to give you a little bit of a picture here as to what we are going to be up against, if you didn't already know. Okay, here we go. The Lummis-Gillibrand Responsible Financial Innovation Act. What to know? On June 7th, 2022, U.S. Senators Cynthia Lummis and Kristen Gillibrand introduced S.4356, the Responsible Financial Innovation Act, which aims to establish a U.S. regulatory regime for digital assets. And you remember, I've said this 1,000 times, anybody who's ever listened to me, and believe me, a lot of people way smarter than me have said this, the language, our language is being used against us. Our language is used to imprison us. Our language is used in order to manipulate us into doing things that we don't necessarily want to do, or even certain things that we don't even understand. Anyways, I digress. Here we go. The RFIA has garnered significant attention because it is the first major bipartisan legislation that, if signed into law, would govern the regulation of digital assets. Under the RFIA, digital assets are defined as natively electronic assets that confer economic, proprietary, or access rights or powers and are recorded using cryptographically secured distributed ledger technology or similar means. Ooh, that's a lot of words. That's a lot of gray area. So many different things can fit into that. That's kind of scary. Anyways, the RFIA introduces an important term to digital asset regulation, ancillary asset. As part of its efforts to settle the current ambiguous and overlapping jurisdiction of the CFTC and SEC in respect of many digital assets. Now, of course, look, you know, it's like I'm not an expert in this, and I can say that from a first glance, this all seems like it may help us. Okay, it may seem that way, but as I'm going to show you in Beautyon's article, which he just released, which we're going to put in the show notes, we might want to really dive into the language that's being used. So here we go. I just published Unpacking the Lummis-Gillibrand Responsible Financial Innovation Act. So let's go and unpack that with Beautyon. Here we go. Unpacking the Lummis-Gillibrand Responsible Financial Innovation Act. The idea that there can be responsible innovation is absurd on its face. If Lummis and Gillibrand were alive during the era of lake ice delivery by horse and cart, they would have found that the electric ice box was irresponsible innovation because many men would be put out of work and horses turned into glue or meat. It's a fair point. That is exactly what's happening with Bitcoin. This new innovation, which allows everyone to have the powers of a bank in their pocket or their business, puts free Bitcoin banks and their ignorant regulators out of business forever. This is irresponsible, according to Lummis and Gillibrand, who want to preserve the broken and corrupt system and put a lick of orange paint on it to give it a modern look. This is the true meaning and effect of them tacking on and spraying the imaginary concocted phrase digital assets throughout old regulations, as is suggested in this bill. It's blockchain fairy dust, and it will not wash. Very well said. And I just want to add, this is kind of one of those situations where we discuss orange washing. I mean, that's literally what this is, because, of course, right, you have this existing institution, this very powerful banking institution, which cannot go away. It can't. It's too big to fail, right? We all remember Too Big to Fail from 2008, right? Too Big to Fail, of course. But some people were chosen strategically to fail, even though they were, in fact, quote unquote, too big to fail. And just to add to that, the other side of it is that no business is too big to fail. And the reason is that if we made a mistake in our business, okay, and our business goes under, do you know what happens? A business that did not make those mistakes, okay, they get to buy up our assets and continue doing the business. That is the way the real market cycles work.
Natural selection, essentially.
Oh, you can't say that. That's just mean. I'm kidding. Obviously, you're right. But, you know, it's like what you just said is mean and offensive to somebody.
Survival of the fittest. Yeah. Yeah. Because being fit is offensive these days.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Of course it is. It's offensive to all the people who are not fit. How dare you? How dare you judge? Anyways, it's just such a load of crap. Okay. All right. Here we go, people. Let's dive into this. This gets heavy. In the definition section, okay, is the evil seed and root of the problem that started this absurd and deeply offensive nonsense. He's talking about the digital assets term, okay? There is no such thing as a digital asset. That's very true. That is an analogy used to contextualize Bitcoin for computer illiterates and not a real thing at all. This is entirely accurate, okay? They make up this term. They apply all the laws to this term, and then once everyone agrees to this BS, they then fork all of those rules onto the gatekeepers, because they actually can't fork those rules onto Bitcoin. They can fork those rules, however, onto all the shitcoins. Anyways, I will continue. Many tools in software can be used to confer economic, proprietary, or access rights or powers. PGP, GPG does this and is not considered an asset. But under this definition, it can be classed as such, as can a plain text username and password, because both of these things and many others confer access rights or powers. In the case of public key encryption, access to plain text and the power to decrypt. Usernames and passwords are cryptographically secured when they're stored in databases, so they are captured by this definition also. This bad logic and computer illiteracy is what powered the insane NFT craze. It's obvious that the people who wrote this are totally ignorant when it comes to how computers and software works. Otherwise, they would have been more precise in their language to capture exactly what Bitcoin does. Lying is an absolute prerequisite here. And I just want to add before we continue, you know, we've said this 1,000 times before, NFTs confer absolutely no ownership over the image, okay? You literally own a URL, a unique hash ID. Anyone can take that image that you supposedly own and do whatever they want with it, whenever they want with it. It is not yours in any way, shape, or form.
It would be like buying someone else's marriage certificate and thinking that you have exclusive access to fuck their wife. Like, that's not how this thing works.
That's not how any of this works. Exactly. Okay. It's crude, but it's true. And that is a great example. You gotta love it. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Now we were looking at digital assets. Now we're gonna look at virtual currency. Here we go. Virtual currency is a vague term that can mean literally any number on a screen where the viewer is led to believe he is looking at a balance that is allocated to him. That means any score in a video game. Like Super Mario Land, 6 golden coins, where you literally collect coins. And this is true. I grew up playing Super Mario Brothers, and we did, in fact, collect coins, which in the game conferred value. Okay. Now, an unintelligent person would say that because that Game Boy game is not networked and the coins are not transferable, it is not crypto or virtual currency. But what they don't understand is that the cartridge itself is the digital wallet, which can be handed over for cash at any time. And the Game Boy device is the wallet viewer that anyone can use to confirm how many of the 6 golden coins are in the game. I got to hand it to Beauty on. These are great analogies, especially for us, well, for me as a Gen Xer. Anyways, if you don't know anything about video games, never played Super Mario World, don't know what cartridges are or how scores are kept in games, you should not be drafting legislation that touches Bitcoin. That's right, boomers.
Isn't the problem with some of this is the age thing, right? You have your senator's average age is something like 64. Like the majority of them probably have never played on any sort of, you know, systems like this. Like, I mean, dude, do you remember mini disc players? Like they were a thing. The idea that you could like no longer have like a, or even like when you got a CD player that had this anti-shake, because you used to be able to, you wouldn't be able to move while carrying your CD player because then the CD would move and then it wouldn't hear it properly. And then they invented this technology where then you can shake it a little bit, and then mini discs, you could shake them as much as you wanted, and that seemed like the most amazing thing in the world. Now the idea of value being stored in a number of different things isn't new to anyone, but the idea of the analogy being compared to Bitcoin may well be, like, I think it's a great analogy, and it's one that I've considered before, and I thought was kind of strange, of the idea of people are basically buying like achievement in a game for real money in the world. But at the end of the day, I thought, well, why is this happening? This is happening because it's about they're buying time, right? At the end of the day, money is about time. And if you want to basically take advantage of the fact that different people charge different amounts for their time, and you can outsource and save yourself time ultimately by spending money.
Very well said. Very well said, Walton. All right, let's continue on, because it, believe it or not, this actually gets worse. I gotta tell you, I was really surprised. I had to do a double take when I read this article originally, because I was like, really? I'm like, Cynthia Lummis? I'm like, you would think that, you know, somebody, especially somebody like that, who's such a, you know, an ardent supporter of Bitcoin and quote unquote freedom.
She self-custody?
You know, that's a great question. Maybe that's something that we should find out. You know, does she self-custody her own Bitcoin? That's a very good point. Okay. Anyways, let's keep going here, because there is a lot to this thing. This is a 48-minute read. Don't get me wrong, people. We're not taking you through the whole 48 minutes, okay? We just chose out some juicy parts that we can riff on. So, I'm sorry?
We're not Guy Swan.
No, that's right. We're not Guy Swan, okay? And we don't have that good, you know, that great kind of tone and vocal training. Anyone writing video games could be forced to register because they're keeping score in a game with a database and would be captured by this. It's insane. And I think that Beauty On makes a great point. I believe that somehow this legislation, because it is vague, okay, but just specific enough to make people think that they're doing something, that it can go and capture a whole bunch of different aspects that we did not anticipate.
Right.
And don't get me wrong, once those laws get passed, we're screwed.
Sweeping net legislation has become the norm, and it's, you don't get things picked off backwards. it's advancing, right? And it's advancing bigger steps.
Exactly. Okay, now we're going to dive into some bigger terms, right? We looked at digital assets. We looked at virtual currency. Now here we go. Now we're talking about distributed ledger technology, okay? This definition makes it clear that the authors are computer illiterate and that they don't understand how anything works in the 21st century. Every database on Earth that has replication, such as MySQL, NDB, or other such capabilities, is captured by this. And I can attest to this. I troubleshot databases in my previous life, and every single one of them have replication services, and you can choose to enable or disable them. They also have mirror services. So this idea, okay, that data is distributed for fault tolerance, this is nothing new. This is nothing new at all. Anyways, data right,
this is
all-
why people buy their AWS subscriptions, because then you're not reliant on one piece of hardware going down because your website, your platform, whatever it is you know, shown to your customers because it's on a number of different drives at a bunch of different data centers.
There you go. Decentralization, right? As long as it's in a different data center.
Often under one company, right? So it's like there's what do you call it? Distribution? Yeah, I think distribution. But there isn't decentralization, right? If it's all under AWS, I don't think you can call it decentralized.
It sure isn't. It sure isn't. But the shitcoiners, they're going to want you to believe that it is, because it's not all in the same data center. Data is always appended to databases following consensus rules of the database engine. True. The term digital asset intermediary captures anyone who provides databases, services, or collects information to be added to a database via a proprietary interface. Digital asset activities literally means rolling dice. Do you think I'm being absurd by saying this? I'm very serious. Look at this. And it's true, right? This is what we don't realize, okay? This is exactly what we don't realize. A digital asset intermediary could be mining Bitcoin with a pencil and paper, right? Just simply writing down those numbers. Or how about using hexadecimal dice? This is how psychotic it can become. And I know that some people are sitting there going, oh, well, you know, this is really extreme. Yes, it is. It is really extreme. And I'll tell you this. I never thought for a second that I would live through a time where entire countries would be locked down. If you were to ask me, Phil, is that possible that that could happen? I would have told you, not a chance. You can't stop everything from working. I was wrong.
Right, Phil, like I said, there's three things you can count on in life. You can count on taxes, exams, and death. They cancelled public exams for the first time in like 150 years in the United Kingdom in 2020. Like these unprecedented events are happening. They're happening more often, and they're getting worse.
I completely agree. I completely agree. And look, if we keep handing these people more keys to the kingdom, they are simply just going to own and control more and more of the kingdom.
Not your keys, not your freedom.
That's right. Not your keys, not your freedom. I like that one. All of these, so the dice rolls, right? All these different types of dice rolls, all of these would be considered digital asset activities, meaning that the manufacturers of the tools that facilitate the activities would fall under the legislation. And then what? Are they going to license the possession of dice? So imagine, right? Imagine you work for Milton Bradley.
That's like, hilarious.
Right? You're going to jail because you manufacture dice that get used to generate a seed word? This is like, nuts.
I apologize. I've never played Dungeons and Dragons, but to all of those like cape wearing basement dwellers, like you're all going to jail, motherfuckers.
That's right. You know why? You're conferring value and you're using dice to do it. How dare you? How dare you? Anyways, here we go. It's ridiculous to claim that a mathematical operation done with dice is materially different to one done in a computer. By this logic, the First Amendment is constrained only to text written by hand, which it is not, and not by a typewriter or in a computer. The device you use to write with is immaterial, inconsequential, and totally separate to your fundamental right to write and publish. No American lawmaker should be unaware of this. Also, there is no exception to the First Amendment for writing. That is math. Math is First Amendment protected speech, which means Bitcoin is also First Amendment protected speech, as painful as that sounds to the haters and the non-believers.
But once again, it doesn't matter that it's not, right? Like, the because it's sufficiently decentralized, like, we've seen, you know, all of this shitcoinery unfolding where you see, once again, even Ethereum is not sufficiently decentralized. Wake up. Bitcoin is the only decentralized network of exchanging value.
And believe me, you know, this is, I shouldn't say believe me, but, and this is to the point of, this is why the governments are ignoring it as much as they possibly can. This is why they are trying to regulate all the on and off ramps as often as they can. Okay. They know they can't stop Bitcoin, but they know that they can, cut, metaphorically, they can cut the head off of all of these other shit coins. The only other way that they, the only trick they can do is this trick through language and through legislation. Okay. But even that isn't sufficient enough to kill Bitcoin. We're back to virtual currency, okay? There's no such thing as a digital asset. Therefore, the rest of this section falls. They're building a tower of lies, layering lie upon lie upon lie. Why is a balance on a banking app not a digital asset? If you have the Chase iPhone app, you can send money instantly to other Chase app users in the same way that you can send a Lightning payment to anyone using a Lightning app. Chase uses distributed ledger technology underpinned by COBOL, which is a very old programming language. So they're 100% captured by this legislation. If not, why not? Now, the digital assets in a Chase app are not legal tender. It is a digital representation of a legal tender. It is not backed by anything. Chase promises to pay legal tender to the sum shown in your Chase app. It's a form of contractual promise only and not money. Chase certainly makes a statement in the form of a promise to pay US dollars on demand of the account holder, and there is a hard peg of 1-to-1 for every digitally represented US dollar in your Chase app. For all intents and purposes, as defined by the draft legislation, the Chase banking app is a stablecoin app. That's right. Okay, this is how ridiculous it all becomes. So here we go. Bitcoin is a database administered by tens of thousands of people and in corporations all over the world. The CFTC cannot be granted jurisdiction by fiat over foreigners and the software they're running on their machines. This power grab will be rejected by all non-US persons, sovereign nations, and the foreign incorporations wherever they are incorporated. The US legislature cannot seize the intellectual property of foreigners or demand anything of any kind from them. This is hubris and ugly American chest beating of the kind that has made America into a hated nation globally. And I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I'm here, I'm in the States, I'm an American, and guess what? At the end of the day, this is not incorrect, okay? The idea that you can force everyone into this regulation just because you choose it locally here is completely insane. And you can see these people have lost the plot and they are scared shitless. But the worst part is they are confused and they have a lot of power. It gets very scary.
Why are they confused? And it's because individuals, and I've talked about this before, like Sam Bankman-Fried, are paying to be in the ears of regulators, legislators, politicians, and putting money in their hands too. This is a fight that is going to be the fight of the decade, is all these Weasley-type ways that largely proof-of-stake funded shitcoiners are trying to fuck with Bitcoin to enrich themselves and you know, fuck everyone else. Like, it's that simple. They want to play fiat games, and they're not doing it with Bitcoin, but they can try and bribe the fiat system to try and fuck with Bitcoin. We mustn't let it happen.
Bingo. That is exactly it, okay? That is exactly it. You poison the players, you poison the game. You know, and this is what they've, this is obviously what they figured out. Anyways, Bitcoin is permissionless, and the companies that work with it should not require advanced permissions to use the database for any purpose. Since it is a First Amendment protected activity, this will be struck down as prior restraint. The government of the USA cannot, in advance of publication, stop a person from publishing anything because they simply believe it may cause harm. This all goes back to what Bitcoin actually is and how it works. And for some reason, that particular paragraph just made me think of the movie Time Cop. Okay, it's an old movie with Van Damme. And I feel like Minority Report may also be closely related, but essentially...
Dude, Twitter is like Minority Report these days, right? Because
yeah, seriously.
You get punished not for the crime, but for thinking about making it, right? You don't get to send that offensive tweet. You get banned for the 12 hours when you click send and they decide not to publish that tweet. So you're actually getting punished for the thought, not for the actual speech.
It's completely insane. It's completely insane. But yeah, going back to the Time Cop movie, for the majority of people that have probably never seen it, they were arresting people before they were committing crimes. Plain and simple, right? So they knew that in the future you would commit this crime based on previous events that would occur. But if one of those events didn't occur, or something slipped up, or something changed, or you made a different decision, then technically you didn't go down that same path to commit that crime.
Right, and it's always going to be probabilistic.
It's terrible. This is just horrible, you know? Okay, here we go. If the acts they're trying to prevent are really worth preventing, surely they should not allow them at all, and not allow people to put themselves at risk. If it really is the task of the CFTC to keep people safe from themselves, why not then allow people to opt out of all CFTC rules entirely? This is some signal here. By simply writing a letter proclaiming, I want none of your protections and nothing to do with you. I waive all protections afforded and offered by CFTC in perpetuity. Now see, if we did have freedom, if we did have true freedom, freedom of choice, freedom of speech, all that good stuff, we could write a letter like this and it would be accepted and it would be understood and everybody would be able to live on their own account. But it's not. We live in an illusion. It is an illusion of freedom, okay? It's an illusion of choice. They don't like Bitcoin, but want a perfect audit trail, which Bitcoin provides out of the box. Bitcoin is the audit trail by design. But if they concede this, they have to acknowledge that Bitcoin isn't money, but an audit trail database. Very interesting take. I really do appreciate this. These people seem to understand that everything they've drafted could be horribly wrong and destructive to America's dominance in this new field. This is why they've put in this trap door to exempt any company that is doing well from these ignorant and ill-advised rule proposals, which can be revoked retroactively, meaning that if a company becomes a trillion-dollar service serving people globally, they're making a provision so that the company can be left unmolested because it is part of the critical infrastructure, like the banks they bailed out, who were exempted from the rules due to the threat of systemic risk. I feel like you want to say something on this, Walton.
Fuck corporate socialism.
I mean, is that not absolutely insane? So it's all good. We're going to draft this stuff up. Like, look, to the retail investor, you're just going to get hosed, okay? Like, we are all just going to get hosed. But if you grow your company big enough and you become valuable enough to the people making the laws, you're all good. We're going to exempt you. This is the psychotic pay-for-play stuff that we deal with. Rules without rulers, right? This is what we want. And this is rules for thee and not for me. This is a generic example of how they're polluting other legislation in this bill. They are adding the fictitious term digital asset all over the place to capture any database that simulates money. Some intern has gone through other legislation and selected places where this invented term can be inserted. The legal and business side effects of these multiple insertions are not knowable in advance. Adding this language puts many industries and individuals at risk. And as Nancy Pelosi famously said, we have to see what it all means after we pass it.
Is that in reference to port, as in like, after you've passed the port, then you can see how tipsy you are and and then you can maybe read a bill or talk about one or whatever she does. I'm not quite sure.
Essentially what she's saying is that we don't really know what's going to happen until after we pass these bills. So this is the mindfuck timeline that we're all living in. Okay. People don't understand what they're doing. They don't understand what they're reading. They don't know how it applies to reality. But make no mistake, we are going to draw up legislation and we are going to force everyone to abide by these rules. This is what I've understood from this whole ridiculous thing.
Right. You don't see so much of, you know, analysis of former laws and whether they should be in place. They're politicians are essentially, legislators building new laws on behalf of the lobbyists and the industries that they represent. These are about building regulatory moats, by and large, stamping out competition. And what are the results of this? Well, it's that you get companies that are too big to fail and nothing close to them. So then, well, they're too big to fail because there's no one to step in, of course. But the reason that they're too big to fail is because they keep getting these moats around them. They keep getting new moats.
And not to mention the fact that those people become part of the current power structure, right? So as a result, it's not that they're too big to fail. It's that we need to keep the all boys club intact. Otherwise, somebody else is going to come along and start their own old boys club. And now
what happens is you get people hopping from regulators to banks to the central bank, et cetera, right? There's so much corruption in the fiat system. This is why Bitcoiners are so passionate about Bitcoin, about a system that is based on truth, is because that truth permeates upwards. If you have a system whereby people are enabled to lie at every stage of it, political, business, social, society starts crumbling. And this is what we're seeing. Bitcoiners are passionate about Bitcoin because it is hope. Like, you know, okay, yeah, hope.com, but like it really is a way that we can build trust minimized relationships, which is what we should have been maintaining. Society got a bit too comfortable, right? We started trusting too much, trusting too many people, too many institutions, trusting the government. We need to minimize trust in areas of our life as much as possible because it enables the best trade, the most sustainable decision making, and the most success ultimately.
Very well said. Very well said. Okay, I'm going to wrap this up with this last line here, with this last paragraph. Bitcoin, like pirated software, cannot be stopped. All of the incentives of pirated software exist in Bitcoin, only exponentially bigger in every way. The desire to get the latest software and movies is very strong. Just imagine how strong the incentive will be to get Bitcoin, since you need it to buy things online and exist. The company that solves the Bitcoin delivery problem will be a multi-billion dollar unicorn. And it doesn't have to be based in the USA either. None of the drafters of this sad, tawdry bill understand these facts. And of course, we're going to put a link, like I said, to Beautyon's article in the show notes in case you want to listen to it or read it. Look, he's absolutely right. And I love the framing that he chose, because by using the video game analogies, by using the database analogies, go ahead. I could see you wanted to say something. Go.
Yeah. So I was thinking, so this Bitcoin delivery problem, I thought, what's the problem? Bitcoin's really easy to deliver. And then no, what does he mean? He means like an Amazon, but for Bitcoin. I'm thinking, why is Bezos not adopting Bitcoin for Amazon? Like, you could take a lot of Bitcoin through Amazon. And I think, wait a second, what's the single most profitable part of Amazon? Anyone know? AWS. That's why the head of the AWS became the new CEO of Amazon, stepping into Bezos' place, because AWS, I believe, does over 50% of the profit for Amazon. And so why is Amazon not adopting Bitcoin? Because they're making too much money off Ethereum and all these shit coins, right? Right.
That's actually a really good point. And interestingly enough, I believe there was an interview with Jeff where he did explain that he does have some quote-unquote cryptocurrency, right? But to your point, okay, to your point, not only do they make so much money off of this, okay, but they get something, they get something I think even more precious than money. They get access to data. Okay. Now, granted, Amazon can't go sitting there. Well, I shouldn't say they can't. They are not supposed to go poking through all your information. But, okay, the thing that they can do is they can triangulate where all of this data is going, where all of this information sits, okay, what happens to it, how it gets modified. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, this stuff is worth money to people. Like, there is a reason why every single one of us has been monetized. Okay, there is a reason why companies like Facebook literally just gave people a platform to let themselves hang. Okay, because at the end of the day, all of that data, everything that we do on these platforms is recorded, indexed, okay, and then repackaged, resold, and used. Companies are not incentivized. Companies are not incentivized to take on Bitcoin. What they are incentivized to do is work with the shitcoiners and work with the shitcoin companies, because those are all things that they can control. This is the ugly truth. And I know that a lot of people, I mean, there's some Bitcoiners that have been cheering this legislation, right? Because it's Cynthia Lummis and she's a supporter of Bitcoin. And, you know, I'm pretty sure we're going to get a lot of hate for this episode. But look, we need to understand, okay, the people that are drafting these laws, they have no idea. They do not understand why Bitcoin. They don't get it, okay? And it's no different than any of the fools that you argue with on Twitter, okay? Because they don't understand why Bitcoin. You have a whole bunch of shitcoiners sitting there yelling at you, telling you about, oh, the tech. You just don't understand because it's the tech. It's like, no, you don't understand. You don't get it, okay? The internet made Bitcoin possible, but the internet needs a native money, okay, that is the fairest possible for all human beings to
trade. Not a native money, a native protocol to transfer value. There's a difference.
Yes, very well said. Native protocol to transfer value, okay? And guess what? All of those other shitcoins, none of them are going to do it because every single one of them can be stopped. Every single one of them can have their rules changed. Bitcoin is the only real thing. And this is the thing. When people didn't take the time to understand why Bitcoin, this is how you fall for these traps. Anyways, so, I mean, look, that was a really long segment. What are your final thoughts on this before we, because we got to give some shout outs, man. What are your thoughts on this before we close out the shitcoin corner?
I mean, look, fuck shitcoins. And I'm going to leave it at that because time is precious. Time is the only thing in your life as a pleb that is more scarce than Bitcoin. So I'm going to save our listeners some time because time is a native protocol to transfer value across the internet.
And to your point, that legislation, the RFIA, that's a shitcoin. Okay, it may not seem like it's a shitcoin, but diving into this, that great write up from Beautyon, it's looking like a shitcoin. All right, guys, there is a fundraiser that that is started for HODLinot. For the people who don't know, okay, what has happened, let's give everybody the website. Essentially, HODLinot is being legally pursued by Craig Wright.
Okay, fuck you, Craig.
Exactly, right? And of course, we're going to refrain from saying all the things that Craig loves people to say so that he can try to sue them. But essentially what's happening is that CSW, for the people who don't know, has been pursuing HODLinot, the space cat, since 2019. And this is all finally coming to a head. They are going to have their day in court. I believe it's in 20 or so days. And there is a fundraiser that has started for HODLinot. And we are obviously going to put that fundraiser in the show notes. And we are going to try to get HODLinot on the show sooner than later so that he can talk about this. But in the meantime, okay, if you want to donate and you support HODL or not. More importantly, you support Bitcoin, the real Bitcoin, okay, not the BSV bullshit. Go and check out defendingbtc.com. Here you can see, you know, the trial's happening September 12th in Oslo, Norway, and you can donate. All right, so please check it out, defendingbtc.com. And before we wrap up, one last thing. We've gotten an amazing outpouring of support from the Bitcoin community. We were not expecting this. We just started making our platform available to stream us sats in the last 2 weeks. And I just wanted to give a shout out, all right, to a few of the listeners that have streamed us sats. All right, we've got Sparky 100101. We've got Zeka Boy, who says Walton is a sex god. Look at that. See, you're already getting that.
Hey,
we've got Jay Hodler. We've got user, some really long number. Okay, so that's multiple times. User with some really long number. Contra Pliant Dude. Anyways, guys, thank you so much for streaming us sats. We will continue to bring the pleb only signal. That's right. Don't forget to come check us out next time on the Pleb Underground.